What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 62 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. After a little bit of a long absence for you, my friend, we have Eric Cole on the podcast today. What's up, Eric?
Yeah, by court order, I wasn't allowed to be on the show for a while. I'm not really sure what happened, but you know.
You have your own podcast now, so I try to let you do that and not steal you too often. And but of course, now the season's rolling on, I need my prospect fixed too. So you're the person I trust the most on Braves things. So there you go. Welcome, sir. I appreciate you doing this.
Absolutely, it's good to be here.
We will get to some minor league stuff later on. But you're also a major league guy as well. You do both. So
I've been known to watch the major league club from time to time.
You do. You're plugged in. Things are not going super well.
Do they still play at Turner Field? Is that the case? Something else happened?
Yeah, I think they might have moved somewhere recently. Have you been, by the way? Have you been?
Yeah. I went Easter Sunday.
I went the day before, so we're close there.
Yeah, it was my daughter's first game, first baseball game ever, actually. So it was a really good day. I caught a foul ball.
Wow, that is a good day.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it hit three different people before it got to me, and I didn't even get out of my seat to get it, but I got it.
Yeah, well, that's good fortune. I've never caught one. This is something of a sidebar, but I have never caught a ball, foul, fair, anything at a baseball game, and I've been to hundreds of them. It's kind of bizarre, but...
Well, she knew that my father-in-law had gotten balls in batting practice, so she really wanted one. So we went out there in the sun and for like an hour and a half and didn't really even come that close. And she started getting upset, and I told her, I'm like, look, I've been to a lot of baseball games. I haven't even come close to getting one. And then literally an Eric Ibar foul ball landed right in front of me.
Oh, shouts to Eric Ibar, Braves legend.
Yep. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it.
That's phenomenal. Well, things are going better for you than they are for the Braves. That was a segue, a professional segue, we would say, in the business. But the Braves have lost six games in a row. They evened things up. Last time we were on the podcast, actually a week ago, the team was five and six, and was scorching hot. And now they are the exact opposite of that after losing six in a row. So, I mean, it's too early to actually like panic and stuff. But today was another brutal loss. Saturday was brutal in the fact that the Braves came back and took the lead on the tie the game, then took the lead and then blew it in the bottom half of the 10th. Sunday was a slow bleed as well. There were some positives, but back-to-back-to-back home runs in the eighth inning is never good.
So no, it's not good. No.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the easiest way to ask you this is it time to panic and jump off bridges, or is this something that's just going to happen from time to time with this team?
It is certainly not time to panic, but here's the caveat. If something could go wrong for the Braves, it has gone wrong. They've had, in Pittsburgh, they had a walk-off home run by a guy who has now been suspended for like 80 games for PED use. Then we've multiple bullpen collapses where like the Braves came back and rallied and took a lead, only to have it lost by the bullpen, whether that be Jim Johnson or today was Vizcaino. And there's been multiple culprits here with the bullpen. And what seems to be a historically bad bench. I mean, every time we need a pinch hitter and like we have like two on or the bases loaded, and then Snicker goes, okay, Emilio Bonifacio, go do your thing. It's painful because you feel like you know what's going to happen. And I don't have a great solution to that problem, because bench bats are always going to be, you know, hit and miss anyway, but ours is really, really bad. So I don't know, maybe with Ryan Howard getting signed, and maybe he can be like a pinch hitter, where at the very least you have to kind of be afraid to throw him strikes, because he, you know, he's not the player he used to be, but he, you know, he can still hit a ball a long way if you just pipe it down the middle. So I don't know. I mean, the way the Braves have lost has felt worse than the, like, a 6-10 or a 6-11 record this early doesn't really mean that much to me. It just feels particularly bad because of the way it's happened, because you could very easily see five of those games ending up being wins for the Braves, but because either, you know, Dansby's luck on balls in play has been awful, the bench has been bad, the bullpen's, you know, thrown away some games. I mean, they could easily have a winning record right now, but instead we're just kind of, we get to watch these games where we're like, hey, this could happen this time. Oh, wait, never mind. You know, it's been peak Barves, and you don't, it's not, it, that's not a good feeling, and I understand why that's upsetting to some people, but at the same time, they've been in these games, a lot of these games late, and I feel like some of that's going to even out down the road.
Yeah, it could have been much worse, as you're putting it, and the fact that the Braves are, I don't know. They are minus 20 in run differential, so that's not great. But I'm also with you in that there's been some opportunities that they've squandered in various avenues. I mean, you look at today's game, and that's a game that got out of hand in a hurry there. And even then, even late, they still had another chance with what bases loaded to come back and potentially even things up. So it's a spot where it's frustrating. Saturday night, as we're recording this on Sunday, that game was infuriating just for a number of reasons. Just even the way they lost in the bottom of the 10th with like just balls that were playable, but the plays didn't get made in the field. You know, there's just kind of it's been something different all the time, but it's been frustrating.
And then there's like the CB Buckner game where he couldn't figure out how to play. He couldn't do any aspect of his job well at all as an umpire. And then you have when you mentioned the run differential, really you can look at Bryce Harper owning Julio Teheran in a game, a bad Bartolo start, and then the game today, and that's almost all of that run differential. Those are just three losses, you know what I mean? But it looks bad, you know what I mean? Those games were not fun to watch, obviously, but at the same time, when you're dealing with small sample sizes, things can look a little wonky, and I'm just not that worried yet.
Yeah, I do think run differential is a good indicator later on, but right now it doesn't mean a whole lot. It's just worth pointing out at least. You mentioned, actually, we were talking about this later, but let's just get to it now since you mentioned it. Julio's a guy that I enjoy a great deal, but I wrote this down to talk about Bryce Harper and the fact that he just, for some reason, absolutely owns Julio. The numbers are kind of staggering.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I'm going to read these off. 33 career plate appearances against Teheran. Harper has 15 hits, 7 homers, 17 RBIs, and 5 walks. He has a .455, .538, and a .1182 slugging percentage. It's a small sample, but it feels like, it's Bryce Harper, so there's worse guys to own you. I mean, he's one of the best players in the league, so I get it. But, man, it feels like it's even crazier than even the numbers indicate. I'm almost expecting him to go yard every time he faces Teheran, because Teheran is your best pitcher, and this is a divisional opponent. That's kind of a terrifying feeling.
Yeah, I feel like Tehran's approach, too, is like he kind of takes that rivalry personally. Like, you know, like it's an interdivision rival, and obviously Bryce Harper is both a very, very, very talented player and also not a particularly well-liked one. And Braves fans, and I'm sure that the Braves players just want to, like, you know, just blow the ball past him and be done with him. I just don't think Teheran has that stuff, and I feel like he's pretty aggressive the way he pitches to him. Just kind of like, you know, pitches that are kind of like middle in, and then, you know, just daring him to hit it. And Bryce Harper, I mean, Bryce is a lot of things, and he is a guy that you can definitely, there's holes that you can take advantage of at times, but he's not the kind of guy you can just like pipe it in the strike zone and not have a lot, really something on it. And then not get punished for it. Because like I said, he's one of the best talented players in baseball. So I wonder if his approach in those at-bats is good. But at the same time, you know, it's Bryce Harper. The numbers aren't good. And I mean, 33 career at-bats, I mean, that's not a big sample size, but it's not a really small one either. So, I mean, it's just kind of one of those things that unfortunately Braves fans are going to have to deal with. But as far as I mean, that's pretty much the only guy that comes to mind that's really kind of gotten to Julio consistently. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those it is what it is type things.
Yeah, I just wanted to even when you see
it's really bad. Yeah,
yeah. The slugging percentage over 1,000. That's not an OPS. That's a slugging percentage by itself. It's kind of just makes it funny and just worth pointing out for the future. If and when this Braves team actually becomes competitive enough,
it looks kind of like Freddie. It looks like Freeman's line from like last week. It's unreal.
Yeah, Freeman has been absurd. He did reach base on 12 straight occasions last week to set a Braves record. He actually went 0 for 4 on Sunday and still has absurd numbers. He has a .238 WRC plus after an 0 for 4 game. So that kind of tells you how crazy Freddie's been.
That is silly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nuts. I mean, it's not sustainable. I know it's not sustainable, but like, do you buy into Freddie as like an actually like an uber elite hitter? Because for the last calendar year, like, he's the best hitter in baseball. And I'm not sure he's that, but there's an argument now that he might be one of the 5-7 best hitters in the league. Is that sustainable, you think?
He certainly is in the conversation. The thing that you like is that, you know, he's not, they're not cheap hits. You know, he's not a guy that's like, you know, like getting seeing eye singles. You know, he's hitting line drives all over the field, and his power to both fields is crazy good. I think that by the numbers, and we might talk about this in a bit, is I think that SunTrust Park is a good place for him, which is going to help. Just in terms of, like, you know, if we're wanting to see what his WRC plus or, you know, how he ranks against the rest of the league in terms of numbers, I think that's going to help him. But just he's for the last, I mean, I guess since from the second half last year until now, he hits hard line drives. He hits lefties well. He, I mean, and obviously he hits righties well. I mean, he's, because he's again been one of the best hitters. Is he going to do this all year? Absolutely not. But I mean, and I struggle to think that he'd ever be like a 300 hitter. But I mean, like 280, 290 with like one of the best WRC pluses in the game because he just makes so much hard contact is not that far off for me. I think he's kind of going to be a guy for the foreseeable future where he can be like in an MVP discussion. It just kind of depends, you know, if he gets on a like he started the year as probably the best hitter in baseball, right? You know, if he can like string together a couple streaks where he does that, I don't know if anyone else is going to be able to keep up with him if that's the case. But if he ends up just turning into a regular Freddie that we kind of know with those streaks, that's still a very good offensive year. You know, and I mean, he's in the conversation. It's hard to say, right? I mean, like some of the best hitters in baseball right now are slumping terribly. So, you know, small sample size warning, you know, is worth taking into consideration. But you'd certainly rather be hitting well now when pitchers usually have an advantage over hitters than if he was like, you know, started the year like 2-for-20 or something like that, like he started last year.
Yeah, this doesn't matter at all, but coming into Sunday, this is before the 0-for-4, that's worth noting, but he already had 1.5 Fangraphs WAR on April 22nd.
He's been nuts.
Which is, again, that's unsustainable, but Freddie is really, really good at baseball. And listen, he's 27 years old. Like, this might just be, I don't want to say the new normal, but like this should be his prime. I mean, this is his physical prime in terms of as at the plate. So it wouldn't be a surprise to see him have a better year than last year. Which coming into the year, I said it would not be a shock to me if 2016 was his best season ever. And by the way, there's no shame in that because he was absolutely awesome last year. But he might beat it in 2017, which would be nice.
He's well on his way right now for sure. And you know, it's worth noting that, like, for the last couple of years, he kind of had some weird nagging injuries. Like, he had a wrist thing, and he had, you know, like, an ankle thing the year before that. Just kind of like these weird nagging injuries. It's possible that, you know, a really, real, like, a completely healthy Freddie Freeman is just one of the better hitters in baseball. Is that sustainable? I mean, when you play baseball, you get dinged up. So maybe he's kind of a guy that once, if everything's firing right, he can do this. But, you know, at the same time, with, like, you know, some things bothering him, he might not be nearly as good. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely healthy. At least he looks healthy.
If he's not healthy, then you know, keep doing whatever you did to him.
My goodness. Freddie's been incredible, and it's good to focus on him to make your life a little bit happier on this fine Sunday evening. With that said, people keep asking me, and I know it's too early to talk about this, but I've purposely spent the last 2 weeks ignoring it on the podcast, but I'm putting you on the spot along with myself now. People think that SunTrust Park is just a hitter's park now, for sure. It's still too early to say that, but it certainly feels like it's going to be one that might help Freddie in the future as well as some other people. But does it feel that way to you? I guess some of these lazy fly balls that are getting out of the park. There was one on the night that I was there. I believe it was from Adonis Garcia that I could not believe left the ballpark while being in the building. Is it feeling like to you that it might be a strong hitter's park? Is that, I guess I know it's too early, but I guess I have to ask.
I think generally speaking, it's going to be a favorable hitter's park for left-handers. I've talked to a few people about it, and it's right there on Windy Hill Road, and there's a reason why the name of that road is what it is, because there is usually some wind out there. And you would think they would just be in all different directions, but from what I understand is that, generally speaking, the direction of the park, I don't think it was chosen by accident. I think that when I was there, the wind was blowing out to left, but it was kind of like left to right. It was blowing out to right, and it was blowing left to right. So, and that seems to be from what I've seen. You know, again, usual small sample size stuff. That seems to be where the wind goes. So, in that sense, I think it's going to be a hitter's park. I don't think there's anything about the dimensions that's like super favorable pitchers or hitters, because the right field dimensions are in, but the wall's also higher. So, you know, that means you really have to kind of get under the ball more. What does that mean? I don't know. But I didn't notice anything that was super out of the ordinary, but I will say that there was a bit of a breeze, and I feel like that maybe based on that location that there's going to be some wind. If that's something that's a consistent thing, then, you know, that's where I would point to it being slightly a hitter's park. But I know that some folks were saying that they thought it was gonna be slightly pitcher friendly, and that's just not true at all.
Yeah, that was the thing that sort of struck me, was that we all heard that coming in before baseball was ever played there, that it might be more pitcher friendly. And the people that I have talked to that are there all the time, that I, you know, get some information from, it feels like, you know, just like all you keep hearing is that the ball just jumps. And you throw in that relatively short porch in right center that Freddie Freeman's already talked about, the, how much he enjoys the 375 in right center or whatever it is like that. Might just be, I mean, it's not going to be Coors Field or anything, but it might be, it's going to be favorable, I think.
I will say this. I was there for batting practice, and there wasn't like balls getting launched out all the time. So,
well, good, because that's the thing for me. I mean, not to cut you off, but like I don't want it to be like crazy one way or the other. I like it to be somewhere in the middle, and even if it just leans one way, we kind of know which way it leans. I just don't want it to become like even like, you know, Chase Field or Great American Ballpark, where like it's not quite Coors, but it's a very, very strong hitter's park. I'd rather it's somewhere
or like a White Sox park where like you hit the ball and like a pop up, all of a sudden the wind catches it and it goes 400 feet somehow.
I don't want that. I mean, I guess it might happen down the line, if you know, especially when the wind's flowing. I mean, I guess the concern is that this early in the year, when it's not hot yet, the ball's already jumping like that, then you could be in some trouble, because normally when it gets hot, stuff, the ball starts flying out a little bit more, but we'll see.
Maybe. I don't know. It's a tough thing. It's tough to say.
It's too early. We know that, but worth talking about because people keep asking, so I wanted to say at least a little bit here. Before we get into some minor league stuff, I want to talk to you about a couple of major league things. This one's more just because it angers me, and I want to tee you up, but why does Brian Snicker keep hitting Adonis Garcia at number two in the lineup? Why? why does he do this to me, Eric? Why?
Life is pain, Brad. Life is pain. Look, Adonis Garcia, it's almost like he has like one game or hits one ball or makes one play at third base well enough that it seems like Snicker sees it and goes, ah, he's finally coming around. You know what I mean? Like, he'll make like one good play at third base, or he'll hit one home run in a good spot, and then you're like, see, this is the guy we think he can be. The guy's like in his 30s, and for the most part can't play third base well, and he is at best a platoon player on a bad team. Now, I'm not sure if the Braves are a good team, so maybe he is a platoon player on the Braves, but he shouldn't. He's not in the top five best hitters in this lineup, and somehow he's in the spot where we would probably put our best hitter if given the opportunity. At this point, I would rather just give Rio Ruiz a shot, or, you know, basically almost anyone else at this point. You know, maybe try to go find someone else, because he can give away at bats. He's a net negative as a defender. I'm kind of just over him. So why Snicker does it, I have no earthly idea. I think he's under the assumption that, you know, putting him in a different place in the lineup will, you know, magically give him powers and hitting ability that he's never had. But I'm at a loss. You know, he's not a particularly fun player for me to watch. Is Rio Ruiz down in Gwinnett, is he a better option? I think I would enjoy watching him more, if for no other reason that at the very least Rio is a capable defender, and I think he'd hit right-handers well, but or reasonably well anyway. But I mean, you kind of count me out on the Adonis stuff.
There's an interesting thing that Snicker's been doing, even in the media, and he's talked about, they of course moved Dansby Swanson down out of the two hole to, I guess, to try to jumpstart him, but in the same breath, they moved Garcia, who was also struggling mightily, by the way, up to the two hole, and then talk about how he could be aided by some sort, you know, quote unquote lineup protection of Freddie Freeman, as if Dansby wasn't aided by the same thing. I don't know. It's just a lot of inconsistency from Snicker. And listen, this is, I understand lineup construction doesn't matter as much as I tend to talk about it. But like, for instance, I think it might have been Friday, maybe even Saturday. I can't remember which one it was. But Garcia was easily the worst hitter in the lineup, and he was hitting in the number one position in the lineup, which is number two. So it's absolutely insane. On the bright side, on Sunday, Garcia did not play, it should be noted, but Snit went to Brandon Phillips in the two-hole, and with the way Phillips has been swinging, that's advisable. I actually wanted to ask you about Phillips, too, because I came into the year kind of negative on Phillips, and looking, he's been great so far, and he had two more hits on Sunday.
Yeah, and he looks good in the field, too. I mean, like, he's not the guy defensively, he's not the guy he used to be, where he was, you know, a web gem waiting to happen a lot of times, because he's, you know, he's also very, like, theatrical, you know what I mean? Like, he'll spin around and he'll show off a little bit, but he's, you know, he's been great. He's been stealing bases, too. I think he's, like, third in the, like, National League in stolen bases now, which blows my mind, but, he's been doing everything right. I mean, he was one of the better players on the field when I saw him the Sunday I went. He was just playing really well. I'm glad that Snicker decided to put him in the two hole, because he's definitely been, that's a good spot for him right now, at least the way he's hitting. But there's a real it's really concerning because, you know, a lot of us, you know, you and I included, when they brought Snitker in, we wanted someone that maybe was a little bit more forward-thinking tactically, or at least wasn't just Freddy Garcia with a different uniform number on. We didn't want Freddy Gonzalez again, right? And tactically speaking, I mean, it's the same bullpen management. It's the same running. You know, I mean, like, there has to be someone else in pinch hitting situations that's better than Emilio Bonifacio in these like big bases loaded situations. There, I mean, I have to believe that there has to be someone else on the bench that can do that and that hasn't done that. Does he have a different demeanor, and do the players seem to like playing for him? I think so. But he's not gaining. We're not gaining any value from any managerial decisions that are being made. Every once in a while, he'll like bring in who he thinks his best reliever is in the eighth inning or something like that, and that's something that Freddie never did. But there's a concern that I have that as the course of the year, we're going to give away more and more, I guess, opportunities on the field because our manager is either stuck in a very specific way of thinking that is not conducive to being successful against other teams that are thinking in a forward-thinking way and can, you know, engineer things better than we can. So it's not something that's an issue that maybe that's one of the reasons why the Braves only gave the 1 year contract to him to kind of see how he actually did whenever he had the reins for a full year. But it hasn't been very inspiring to watch in terms of like the managerial decisions that have been made.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. We'll see how it goes moving forward, but I've not been impressed. That's one thing that I will say. And this stuff off the field, it does matter. It always matters more than I want to talk about, and people seem to like Snitker. But on the field, the stuff that we can see, the tactical stuff, the strategic stuff, it's not gone particularly well. I will say that. But it's a small sample. Maybe he'll somehow improve. I'm skeptical of that, and I think that's one of the reasons, as you just said, that they didn't invest fully in him, which kind of drove me crazy at the time, because either hire a guy or you don't, and they kind of took the half measure, which I didn't like. But still, I don't want to get too deep into that again. It's just worth noting that things are going wrong that could be avoided, and that's all we'll say about that.
Agree.
Before we get out of Major League land, I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about the last couple of days? Aaron Blair was up as a long man. He went back down. Matt Whistler was up after that to replace him. Are you okay with those guys kind of ping-ponging back and forth into the emergency long relief? Of course, it was created by sort of a bullpen need, so I understand that. But are you okay with those two guys in particular being the guys who are going to go up and down and become the long man when they need that?
Well, I know that Colometer wasn't available, and that's one of the reasons why they called Blair up first.
Yep.
I don't think Blair minded. Everything I've heard, it was kind of understood that it was going to be a short term thing. I don't think he's going to miss a start because of it. And honestly, I mean, his first start in AAA was a disaster. It was really bad. But ever since then, he's actually looked pretty good. His delivery is different. You know, when he was in the majors, he kind of like whenever his delivery, he would like have like a long coil. He'd like almost twist all the way backwards and then throw. He's like gotten rid of a lot of that noise, and he's locating his fastball bat much better, and his sliders looked good. So I was kind of hoping that, you know, maybe he was going to be sticking around for a little bit longer. Now Matt Whistler, on the other hand, if you need a bullpen guy and you just need him for a couple days, I guess that's fine, because you want Blair to get the start, you know, make sure he doesn't miss his start. But Whistler, his home run problem is really, really bad. When he gives up, look at every game he's played this year. I mean, it's two or three home runs every game. He's leaving his pitches up, and you know he has a real slider that he can use as a weapon, but his fastball location is like middle. And you know, when he's not throwing particularly hard, so all he's doing is throwing batting practice to some of these guys who know how to hit. And this is just against AAA hitters. So I'm much lower on Whistler at this point now. But I do see a potential for Blair to do something, potentially still as a starter. That's more of a wait-and-see type thing. But right now with Whistler, I see little to no hope that he's ever going to be anything, just because he can't keep the ball in the yard. He's too hittable, and he's just going to get knocked around by these big league hitters.
Yeah, the command's just not good enough. He has to be perfect to pitch well because of the stuff just not being that good. It's been my concern for a while, and I know we have a couple of guys who really like him. Carlos likes him. Zach Diller likes him. Guys that I respect, but I just don't get it, honestly, at this point in time. And I liked the profile was okay. It's just that he has to be perfect.
When everything goes right, because you have to paint the corner. You have to paint the corners with his stuff. You have to go like, if you want to be in the middle, like, you know, from top to bottom. If you want to be in the middle, you need to be in or you need to be on the outside corner because you can't just pipe it in them down the middle. He doesn't have that kind of stuff. There's not real run in his fastball. His changeup is fine as a change of pace pitch, and his slider is legitimately good. But if you're sitting on his fastball and you once it comes, it's not doing anything that's going to fool you.
Well, yeah, it's the situation where, I mean, for instance, like he's allowing almost a home run and a half per nine innings in the majors. And it's not that small of a sample, but like his control was good. Like by a regular starter standard, he's only walking three guys per nine in his major league career, but he has to be a guy who walks like one and a half per nine just because he cannot give up base runners. Cause he's always going to give up. Even if he fixes the home run problem, so to speak, he's always going to give up more than you want because of the fact that he's so hittable. If he misses at all, it's going to be meat for other people, and he just has to be an elite control guy. He's just not elite. He's good enough to like be a, you know, he's a major league-ish pitcher. Like he's not an embarrassment on the mound. Like he has a career 4.88 ERA. That's not good at all, but it's not like you can't function. Like he could be a fifth starter for a bad team, I guess. But aside from that, in terms of like upside, where this rotation's probably headed with all the guys that they have competing for these spots in the future, I don't really see that spot for him. I just don't.
I'm with you.
Well, anyway, I wanted to at least get that out there because it's sort of a news item, too, that those guys were up and down. And Whistler, I guess, is still on the team as we record this, so we'll see how long he lasts up. But, yeah, it was all spurred on by Cole Beecher being unavailable. But still, the fact that they went ahead and brought Whistler up again after they sent Blair down was kind of, I don't know if that it wasn't that weird, but it was at least noteworthy that they were able and willing to do that. One more thing about calls from AAA. We mentioned Ryan Howard at the top. He looked good in Gwinnett in his debut, but you know what does that mean? Are you at all excited about Howard? Is he a guy that like could function? Obviously, he's a non-defensive entity, but he also would probably be the best hitter on the bench right now in the major league. So, do you think he can be up anytime soon? We were talking about this like probably 2 weeks ago, and he didn't even appear in Gwinnett until over the weekend. So, I guess it's the timeline's sort of funny. But do you think he can be helpful when and if he arrives?
We had Jeff Jones, one of our writers. He saw Ryan down in extended, and he said that you know he looked fine. He was still trying to get in game shape, and now that he's in AAA, meaning obviously he's only had one game, but he looked good there. I don't know. How do I put it? I mean, I would put him on the bench right now anyway. It wouldn't matter to me in the slightest if we did that or not, because right now the bench is so bad that having someone that at least has some ability to put fear in pitchers and make them understand that there's going to be consequences for just throwing strikes, that he can still turn around on a pitch, even if he can't do it as much as he used to. I mean, I don't think he needs to stay in Gwinnett long because honestly, he's not competing against anyone that. He's not competing against anyone on that bench that's really going to have a long baseball career beyond this year regardless. I just don't know how that affects certain other roster decisions, like who's going to be backup center fielders and in the outfield and things like that. So I'm hopeful but that he'll be up soon because I just rather have a bat that is worth something on the bench. But also, I mean, all he would be doing is backing up Freeman. And because you can't put Ryan Howard in the outfield. I just don't see
you
that.
You can't put him anywhere. No, he's a pure bench bat. Which listen, I mean, it's kind of funny to talk about it because I'm all about some versatility on the bench. But as bad as the bats are, like you just have to have a single pinch hitter. Right now, you just don't have that. I mean, how long can you? I mean, even scenario now that Snicker keeps using Bonifacio is infuriating anyway on a number of levels. But it's not as if he has a good option. I mean, there are better options than Bonifacio. But that's a low bar to clear. And I think, when your best bench bat is either, if Tyler Flowers is off that day, it's Tyler Flowers. And if it's not, it's probably Jace Peterson. That's terrifying. You have to have somebody else to pinch hit in a big spot. And they just don't have anyone right now. So yeah, nope. call up Ryan Howard as soon as he's even close to ready. I'm with you on that all the way. And I'm not sure they'll do it.
Yeah, and there's nothing you lose if it doesn't work out. Right. I mean, you didn't sign him to a big money deal or anything like that. But there's real upside with Ryan because there are games where a lot of these games where if we just needed two runs driven in. I mean, Ryan's not good at a lot of things, but he can hit a ball far. So,
yes, Braves fans know that too well because, of course, he's famously tormented the Braves for a long time. But he's not that guy anymore. But he at least has power. There's no question about that. He's a terrifying guy, especially against right-handed pitching. You don't want to see him if you're the opposition in the box.
No, SunTrust will treat him well too.
Absolutely. If he is even a I don't even know if he's 80% of his old self, then he'd be terrifying in that park.
I'm not sure if we're at a 80.
Maybe 60%. 50% something, I don't know. If he's a functioning result, so
yeah, it still would be the best bench bat by far on this team.
That's a low bar, but yes. Well, I have to ask you about some minor league stuff. You of course have the podcast that I expect you to plug vociferously on this on this show. But
I'm not good at the plugging, Brad.
I know. I'll do it for you later if you don't do it well yourself. But I saw you were in Rome a little bit recently, so talk to me about that and anything that's like sort of either surprised you or encouraged you or even terrified you that you've seen in the minor league level in the next couple of weeks.
Sure. It's been a lot of fun to start the year. It's always fun just like when all the teams get started, you kind of know where everyone is and you get to see the best part for us is like, you know, we have to kind of guess where these guys are going to go and how they're going to do. And a lot of it is just kind of hopes and prayers because a full off season with these guys that especially they're so young, their bodies change, their workout regimens change, you know, and you don't know exactly how healthy they were to end the year. You're not really 100% sure how healthy they are to go into the year. So it's been a lot of fun for us. We kind of spread out a bit. Jeff was he saw a couple Fire Frogs games. I saw the home opener at Rome and as well as the Saturday game after that. Garrett, I think, has already been to Gwinnett. The only place that we haven't had eyeballs on in terms of live has been Mississippi just because it's so far away. But luckily, with the move to Fire Frogs to Florida, we actually have someone that's like within the time zone to actually see them. Rome was interesting because that team is really weird. There's like 60 runners on that team. There's like 6 or 7 runners on like base runners on that team. They're like 60 to 70 grade. they're all super fast. Then you have Darian Cruz, Christian Pache, Randy Ventura. Those are kind of the main names, right? But and Anthony Seymour, who's a legitimate 80 grade runner.
Yeah, he's absurd.
He's so fast. And then there's guys like Marcus Mooney who are really quick, Kevin Josephino who are really quick. I mean, and all they do is just kill people with singles. Like it is all singles all the time with like Christian Pache and Anthony Concepcion occasionally hitting a double, Juan Yepes occasionally hitting a double, but other than that, they're just running wild in low A. So they're really fun to watch. Randy Ventura has been kind of a funny guy because when he was in the Dominican Summer League, he stole like 50 or 60 bases, and everyone wanted to know how well he was going to do. It was kind of like a running joke that he was like kind of like the man, the myth, the legend type thing. But he's definitely thicker, I think, than he was in the DSL, but he can hit. He's got really good hands, drives the ball to the opposite field really well. He's a legitimate prospect, and he's a good right fielder too. Christian Pache has looked really good in the field. At the plate, he's been kind of hit and miss at times. The approach on this whole team is a little, it's a swing first, ask questions later type of approach. They do strike out a good bit, but they also put the ball in. They're also like they make enough contact, and once they do, they start, basically every single is a threat to be a double or a triple. So. The position prospects have looked really fun and really interesting. The two pitchers I saw, starter pitching anyway, I saw Jeremy Walker. He was holding 93-95 into like the fifth or sixth inning when I was there. Fastball was a little flat. It seemed kind of hittable, but he was spotting it pretty well, and breaking ball was pretty good. So he was kind of a little bit of a surprise to see how good he was. Joey Wentz is an interesting pitcher because I wasn't super impressed. I thought his fastball was pretty flat, and he was only throwing – I never saw a pitch on a gun higher than 91 for him. But he was he was moving the ball around in the zone enough, and that's kind of what he's been doing all year is just kind of, he'll locate his pitch. He's not like a dedicated, like, I pitch to the outside type of guy or I pitch up or anything like that. He does move the ball around a good bit, and the breaking ball looked pretty good. That's what I saw. I mean, the relievers, there kind of is what it is. They've had to do a lot of work recently because it seems like Rome's constantly in these games where, gets the extra innings. And it's like one game the other day was like 18 innings, and that was the night that I had to recap, and I was not happy. But yeah, it was a long day. But with low A, it's you are operating under the assumption that these are all basically most of them are right at this point are teenagers or have barely played any full season ball. So I don't treat too many conclusions, but Ian Anderson has looked great. He's striking out batters at a really high clip. You know, a little bit wild right now, just a little bit. He's walking a few guys, but nothing that's too much of a red flag. And his stuff has looked really, really good. Breaking ball and fastball, especially. Now, if we're just talking about guys in general that I've really liked, Alex Jackson is hitting the cover off the ball. I mean, I had it pulled up earlier, but I think his OPS is like almost 1,000.
That was the guy I was going to ask you about specifically, because that's a name that people keep asking me and the Talking Chop account about. And he's a big name, but also sort of a buy low that the Braves did. So I saw the numbers. Obviously, I will defer to you on scouting stuff, but it seems pretty encouraging, at least early on.
He looks really good. I mean, I think he's like striking out maybe at a little less than a quarter of the time, which is not really what you want to see, especially since I think he's only walked twice. But he's also he's making really good loud contact, and he's working deep counts. The nice thing about the Fire Frog, well, the bad thing about the Fire Frogs is that they don't have an MILB TV stream. No one in the Florida State League really has, video streams of them, which is really infuriating. But their audio stream is excellent. So you kind of get a good idea as to kind of what's happening in the bats, and, it gives you at least some semblance of what's going on. And between what I've asked a few people how he's looked at the plate, as well as kind of following that, he's working deep counts. It doesn't seem like he has an approach problem. It doesn't seem like his swing is super long. He's been really, really good. I think he went hitless today, but I think he's had three games all year where he hasn't gotten a hit. He's just had constant streaks over and over again, doing really, really well. And hitting for power, hitting for average, right now I think he's hitting like 320, 330, something like that. He's just doing really well. And more importantly, behind the plate, he's probably played a little less than half the games there, and his pitchers love him. He's calling good games. When they're struggling, he seems to be able to kind of rein them back in and start calling pitches to kind of get them back, get their confidence back. And I don't think he's trying to do too much back there. And he hasn't. I think he has one pass ball, maybe a couple errors. A couple throwing errors. Has caught a couple base stealers. He hasn't caught guys at like a high clip. But considering a guy who hasn't caught since high school, I mean that's. For an organization that desperately needs a catching prospect, he's a really good one. And I think that he's gotten better and better behind the plate defensively, that he's going to jump up some lists in terms of prospects this year. And he's really, really good start so far. Pitching wise, I mean, to the surprise of absolutely no one.
Here we go.
Mike Soroka is really good at baseball. Bro.
Yes. Really, give it to me.
Okay. Well, to be fair, Colby Allard also really, really good at baseball. That whole rotation is ridiculous down in Mississippi. For any of our listeners who are in Mississippi, just go to Pearl and just watch any of those guys. Any of them is fine because they're all so good, and they're so fun to watch for all of them are for different reasons. But Mike's just not giving up anything. And it's hilarious because the first start I saw, the strike zone, this umpire – was easily two-thirds the normal strike zone. He wasn't giving up anything on the outside, right? Just like if it was on the outside corner, it was a ball. It didn't matter. Mike's given up, I think, 6 hits all year so far. So first he had a 5 shutout innings, I think. The next one he gave up 1 earned run where it was with 1 out left in the game. It was a doubleheader and he was in the 7th inning. And the last hitter, he left a ball up. And the guy hit a solo home run, but that was the first run he had given up all day. And I think it was the 3rd hit all day. And he struck out a bunch of guys. And then this last game, he gave up 2 runs, but he hit a batter, gave up his first hit of the day, which was a triple, scoring that runner, and the other runner scored on a wild pitch. He didn't give up another hit in that game. Batters are batting 108 against him.
Is that good?
Seems pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean, and he's striking out batters. He's the guy that I've been preaching about for a long time. He's a command and control guy. His stuff is better than that people give him credit for. He doesn't have Tukey's or Fried's curve, and he doesn't have Weigel's or Newcomb's fastball that runs up 98. But he changes speeds well. He knows how to pitch, and his changeup is so much better this year. It's really keeping batters can't sit on his fastball because that changeup is going to eat him. And he's throwing strikes and guys are really off balance. He gets some really ugly swings on pitches that you wouldn't expect him to get really ugly pitches, swings and misses on. He's striking out more batters this year than he was last year. I thought that a move up, an aggressive move up, might help him a bit because he's not just going up. He's not against low A hitters or just swinging and praying. because there's not a whole as much of a thought process because they haven't really learned how to hit yet. These are guys who are going to try to outthink Mike, and it's just not going to work. So, you know, he's going to be able to outthink them and get them to do things that they don't want to do. So really excited how he started the year. The whole Mississippi rotation has been excellent, but in particular, Colby and Mike have really been really, really good.
Yeah, we actually got a question from Patrick Mollett on Twitter. I appreciate the question, Patrick. He asks, he basically says, it's still early, assuming Allard and Soroka do well, should the Braves keep them both in AA all season, regardless of how well they do? I guess people were trying to already start pushing these guys, but it's worth asking.
I mean, it depends a lot on what happens in AAA more than anything. I don't think that if you aggressively promote pitchers to AA, that moving them up to AAA is going to matter much either way, if that makes any sense. If they do really well in AA, then they're probably going to be competing for the same slots that they would normally be in spring training next year. It depends. For example, Lucas Sims has been intermittently quite good this season. He's had a couple, it hasn't been peak Lucas Sims where he's good for four innings and then he gives up six runs or anything, but you know, has had some inconsistencies, but overall he's been doing pretty well. Do they move him to the bullpen out of the rotation? Do they do something with Sean Newcomb where he gets called up? There's questions in that Gwinnett rotation, Aaron Blair, Matt Whistler, chief among them. If there's openings that open up, I think a guy like Patrick Weigel, who's a little bit older, would be inclined to get promoted first. And again, all these guys have been pitching well, so it's not like a huge, you know, consideration one way or the other than maybe like, you know, like age and wanting to be able to give guys enough time and reps and things like that. Freed being another one, because he's already on the 40-man roster, although he's actually had a really rough start to the year. If they're pitching really well, do you move them up? Maybe. But like I said, I think there's a lot – with moving guys from AA to AAA, I think it has a lot more to do with what's going on with the AAA roster than anything else, because there's not really that much of a reason to move them to AAA.
Yeah, I mean, is it – it's sort of always the question. Like, people always treat – I mean, this makes sense. They treat it linearly to be going from AA to AAA. But a lot of times, you know, the top prospects are not in AAA. They're normally a little bit lower. So, I don't know. It wouldn't be that big of a deal. And with that said, I can't imagine them pushing them too well, especially because, you know, some of the reason to have a guy in Gwinnett is to have him close to the big league club, and neither one of those guys are coming up anytime soon to the big league club because they're still incredibly young. So it would surprise me if they wanted to push. Because listen, pushing those
guys—they're both going to be 19 until August, Brad.
them being in AA right now is pushing them. To be honest, I mean, given their age,
we knew that Freed was going to go. And I was sure that Weigel was going to stay there because he ended the year like – I think he made two or three starts for Mississippi at the end of the year. I still knew they were going to be there. I was genuinely shocked. I thought that the high A to double A jump I understand a lot more as moving him up, wanting to get more experienced competition, against more experienced competition. To move them up right to double A was kind of shocking to me, given how young they are. But I talked to I talked to five different players and said that those two guys had – unbelievable springs, and that's why they got bumped up. They actually I heard a rumor that Allard, Soroka, and Austin Riley had already got an apartment together in Orlando, and then they got the call saying they were going to Mississippi instead. Wow. So Austin Riley had to, like, you know, get that's the rumor I heard. Whether or not it's true or not is completely different, but you know, it's just hilarious to me that, you know what I mean, like, I think that those guys really showed out in spring, and you know, they're doing it in the regular season, and it's really fun to watch.
For sure. And listen, it's always good. It's exciting when the big league club especially is struggling to look down and see all this incredible talent in the minors. And it's better to have that than the way that it used to be even, you know, 3-4 years ago when it was, you know, Sean Gilmartin and
J.R. Graham. We got J.R.
Graham. Christian Bethencourt was the number one guy for a while.
Todd Cunningham. We've got there's some real gems. I gotta think. There's another guy whose name I can't remember now, but he was like a first round pick in like 2011, and he was around forever, but he's no longer with the organization.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. So it's nice to have fun guys to talk about down there. Well, Eric, I appreciate you doing this, man. Please plug your show. If you don't do it, then I will. But I'm gonna let you try to do it first.
All right, I'll try. Each week, we're still trying to get it sorted out for how we're going to do it in season, because weekly recaps, you know, can seem a little bit tedious. But the name of our podcast that I do along with Garrett Spain, you might know him as Braves Farm Updates on Twitter, as well as Gaurav Vidak, you may know him as Braves Reddit on Twitter. We all do a minor league podcast. It's called The Road to Atlanta. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Road, the number 2, Atlanta. And it's basically an hour-long show, and we have guests on sometimes. Hopefully we're going to be able to get some players on soon. We've had, you know, we have radio guys. We've had analysts from Baseball America come on as well. We talk minor league baseball, and during the season, it's going to be a lot of going through what's happened the previous week or two, talking about the developments in these guys, seeing what we're seeing, things we're worried about, things we're not worried about, and really just kind of having really in-depth discussions about all aspects about minor league baseball. The fortunate thing about what we do is that we can dig, since we don't have to parse too much what's going on in the major league club, we can talk about guys that don't necessarily get much coverage from, you know, national media or even prospect ranking lists, because, you know, those are the kind of guys that can sneak up and be really interesting. And it also is a nod to these teams, because, you know, there are so many players on these rosters that are never going to see the major leagues, but that doesn't mean that they didn't do something valuable on the field or something interesting. So we really delve into that, and we try to tell those stories as well as talk about player development, and, you know, try to give useful information and preview guys who we hope will be in Atlanta in the next couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. Please subscribe, do all that fun stuff. And also, Road to Atlanta is hosted on talkingchop.com. So there's a post that Eric does. I believe you write it usually, right? It goes up after the podcast on the site. So check that out as well. Eric, again, man, I appreciate you doing this as always. We'll do it again shortly, because we're in season and there's like stuff to talk about. It's really nice. And it's almost harder for you guys to do minor league stuff.
I have to catch up with Scott, right? Because, I mean, I don't know how many appearances he has on me now, but he definitely has a few now.
Yeah, the problem is, and this is a little bit inside baseball, is that I don't sleep, and Scott is on West Coast time, so we can record at like 11 p.m. and it's for me, and it's great because Scott's awake. But yeah, you're definitely number 2. I mean, aside from Carlos, it's Scott, and then it's you in terms of appearances. But yeah, we'll have to see if you can catch Scott during the year.
Okay, first of all, I heard the waver in your voice when you said I was the number 2.
No, I was trying to do the math. Like, am I missing somebody? No, I think that's true.
I have a funny story. So we did the podcast where we previewed every single minor league roster that was released.
Oh yes.
We started recording that at like 10:30 at night, and it was a 2-hour podcast that I then had to edit that night.
Oh yeah, I know the feeling well. For those of you that don't know, I also host a daily Atlanta Hawks podcast.
You're on mute.
So yeah, there's some late night stuff going on for sure. But listen, I'll have to have you on more. I'll take full responsibility for not having you on lately.
No, it's Carlos's. No, it's Carlos's fault. It's fine.
Everything is always Carlos's fault. But I do want to have you on more often. Now that we have broken the seal since you started your own podcast, I wanted to let that simmer a little bit. Let people focus on that a little bit.
Oh no! I love listening to Scott. I love when Carlos comes on. I mean, I people would get tired of listening to me and reading my stuff anyway. You know what I mean? I love listening to all of y'all. I mean, and some days, honestly, it's probably better that like I probably have not given access to a recording device and a microphone, because sometimes I get really salty. In particular, the rumors today that because Ozzy Albies was in the state of New York, that the Braves are going to be calling him up.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, this is a thing. This was a thing today.
I missed that actually.
No, he took an Instagram post and like Gwinnett is playing Rochester. And all it was a picture of Ozzy Albies sitting, and it said New York, New York on it, which was clearly like he was either in the city visiting since like their game got rained out today, or like he just was just saying New York, New York on Instagram. But, you know, one funny Twitter post turned into Ozzy Albies is going to be called up, and is he going to play third base? And I was like, what is even happening right now?
No, he is not going to play third base.
No, he is not. No, he is not. But somehow it got into Bowman's ear, and he had to clarify that this is not going to be happening.
Yeah, so. And if Bowman has to address it, you know, Bowman's the chief.
Well, so. that was Scott saying, please stop this.
Oh, I'm sure. And Scott has Scott has the direct line to Mark Bowman, which I always appreciate about Scott, because it's good. We can get Bowman's comments whenever we need them. So shout out to Mark Bowman. Shout out to you, Eric Cole. I appreciate you doing this, my friend.
Absolutely. It was a blast, man.
All right. Well, as for everybody else, we'll be back next week. Hopefully the Braves will have righted the ship by then. And even if they haven't, we'll be here. So stay tuned.